Good.
So we have the pleasure of speaking with Doug Seacat. Doug, what is your military title? I was going to call you Sergeant, but I don't think that's accurate.
No, I was a Chief Master Sergeant.
Chief Master Sergeant, man. And so your folks would come up to you and say, Chief Master Sergeant Seacat.
In a formal setting, yeah, typically it's just Chief. Yeah. Hey, Chief, what's going on?
Okay, all right.
Yeah, it's funny, right. You know, I joined back in 1980, and I know you know Johnny V, I see him on your site. I was just literally arriving at basic training in the chow hall, had my beggar's opera jacket on, and he walked by me, goes, nice jacket. And I guess he was just finishing up. I think he had joined probably like a month or two before me. But what's weird though is, you know, you're in such shock and awe when you get there, you don't have any situational awareness. I just said, okay.
Right.
I'm pretty sure it was him. I remember that face, but yeah, he and Johnny and I talk every once in a while.
Yeah. Actually he told me a similar story when I interviewed him. He said, you're not going to believe who I met when I was in the military, and he told me it was you, and told me something similar where you guys just sort of ran into each other. He also said that I think he was a recruiter and you were, you know, a big cheese there. And you had come to visit him.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, we both recruited for quite a long time. You know, start off as a recruiter, then you get progressively, you know, more senior leadership position. So he was probably, you know, I think he was a director, regional director, I believe. So he was pretty high up there as well. And I think he was a master sergeant, which is a pretty good rank in the Air Force.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, great times in recruiting service with him. And his name comes up a lot. He's kind of a legend in the
business. Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
He could strong arm people better than other people. that's great. So thanks for doing this. What we've been doing is speaking to people and putting together just some amazing interviews. And it's just a conversation about what happened when we were kids. And obviously you were a big part of that time. I'm wondering what was kind of your earliest memory of connecting with Braddock Park or the guys from that area or, you know, that time.
Sure. I've been going to Braddock Park since I was about 7 years old. And here's why. My aunt and my godmother, the Gelish family, lived three doors down from Braddock Park Gate. So we would go there for our get-togethers. You know, we were little kids. We'd have as you remember back in our day, we were at somebody's cousin's house every weekend for a barbecue.
Right.
Right. So we go there, then they tell the kids, get the hell out of here, go to the park. And at that age, you know, we did swings and hopscotch and all the other stuff like that. But yeah, but I think from the time I was seven until I think I stopped going when I was like in high school, senior high school, because I was moving on. But no, great, great place. I mean, it's funny. I walked to my aunt's house on a regular basis, which seemed so long. I think it was like a mile and a half, you know, but you know, now I drive 1,000 miles to go somewhere. It's like, holy crap, New York really is pretty, pretty condensed. But I had a lot of good memories of the park, both family-wise and also the guys and gals I met from Lord's and things like that.
What was the family name, your aunt?
Gelish.
Gelish.
Yeah.
Did they live on Fairbury?
Yeah.
Or?
Oh, no, Davenport Lane.
Davenport, okay.
Yeah, they've since moved. I mean, everybody, you know, a lot of older folks are no longer with us, but I still got cousins who they're all on the island now. But yeah, they lived literally either two or three doors down from the park.
Wow.
So yeah, it was great. It was really good.
Oh, and you lived over on, was it 220th Street in the big yellow house.
Yep.
Big gold house. And what was famous about your house? There was a movie film there.
Yeah, Goodfellas back in 1989. There's probably about 15 minutes of, you know, various scenes within the movie. I was in the military, so I didn't get a chance to be there. But my family had some great photo ops with De Niro and Ray Liotta, and Stacey.
I mean, fun.
My younger brother Georgie, I don't know if you remember him, but he. He was a big film guy at that time. So he had actually interviewed Scorsese's father, Joe Pesci went on with you. Barbara Hershey stopped by. And I mean, it was really, I kind of wish I could have been home for that. But no, it's pretty cool. And it's a really great, you're not going to believe this story. Anytime somebody tells me they're from Queens, I'm like, oh, I got a great Queens story for you.
very unique to have Hollywood come to Queens.
I know.
The Flemings had Jerry Fleming and his family. They had the Postman Always Rings Twice. I think that was the name of the movie. Filmed in their house.
The original the later one with Jack Nicholson.
I think it was the one with Jack Nicholson.
Okay, yeah, because there was actually original black and white version. It's really a
No. So it was the remake then. And they had it filmed in their house.
That's cool.
It was really cool. I mean, their house was just destroyed by all of the activity. Of course, you know, they rebuilt it for them. But that was the other kind of famous movie that was filmed in our area.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
So what about OLL? You lived literally right up the block.
Yeah, I think walked to school every day. I think it was two and a half blocks. You get to the intersection with Chapels on the right and then Main Rectory on the left. I think I started there, I want to say third grade. I had Sister Patrice, I think, so I was third grade, right?
Oh, so you were in my class then.
I think we were. You know, there's so many, like my best friend in the whole world, Anthony Toro, and his sister Vivian went to Lourdes also. Regrettably, we lost Anthony back in 95. But I just ran into Vivian. Do you remember the Toros?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, so Vivian now lives in West Palm. My sister moved down to Port St. Lucie, so I've seen her. She still looks amazing, still looks like she's 22 years old. But, you know, we did the same thing you and I are doing over a beer, just walking down memory lane and talking about how kids today have no idea what it's like to grow up in a neighborhood. You know, if you talk to somebody right now who's, you know, 16, 17, they'll never say, I know Dougie from the neighborhood. Hang on a second. I felt stop. You know, it's just like, it was a neighborhood. It was that, you know, we had that familial thing going on with not only relatives, but friends. And it was just such a great, tight way to grow up. Nothing but great memories of being a kid.
Yeah. 100, and I think that's what we're getting to with these interviews. You know, someone said, oh, you're going to hear the same stories over and over again. I hear no stories over and over again, but there are definitely themes that we hear over and over again. The theme of walking out your front door and swimming in a whole bunch of other kids, walking to places.
Oh, yeah.
Kids don't walk anywhere today, you know, and where you live close, but there were a lot of people who lived on the west side of Springfield. You know, they would walk a mile to school when they were in first grade.
Wow.
You know, that's just extraordinary. Holly Sojin reminded me that he and I used to walk to kindergarten to PS 33, which was about a half mile away. I don't know any parent today of a kindergartner who would allow their child to walk out of the house to the car, you know, without protecting them and guarding them. And, you know, because of that guy who's out stealing children, that just doesn't exist. You know, the myths that exist today that protect kids are doing them so much harm.
Oh, man, I couldn't agree with you more, Mike. It's, you know, I read a great article, The Feminization of Men in America. It was like a couple of years
ago. 100%.
And you know what? We're men, right? We grew up in Queens, New York. We're tough guys. You know, you don't fuck with us. We got each other's back. Now guys are like, I can't. Starbucks wants me to work 8 hours a day. And he's actually crying on a video. Oh, Starbucks, it's not fair. And all this woke crap. I'm sorry. I'm a very liberal guy. A lot of my friends are married gay couples. If you want to dress like a woman and pretend, that's fine, but don't ask me to do it. Sorry, I'm not gonna support your.
Yeah,
your...
you know, I think you represent the way a lot of people feel. Certainly, I am also a very liberal Democrat, and yet I disagree with a lot of the left stuff, with as much energy as I disagree with some of the right stuff, which is also crazy. So sure. what we have in the country right now are really two polar ends that are nuts. And what we've forgotten is the 80% of us that live in the middle that might disagree on things, but we also agree on a whole lot.
Sure. Yeah, and I know it's not a political conversation, but I'll just wrap up this portion with this. You know, right now, you know, I'm an old school 63, I think. Yeah, 63 New Yorker. It was funny. I was at dinner with some friends, and they have drag show brunches here. Like I think it's great.
Yeah.
I said, you know, it's funny because back in the old days, they would go to the tranny shows and, you know, it was very, very, really popular and nobody made a big deal about it. And she goes, we don't say tranny anymore. This is a recent graduate. I mean, she graduated with like, I think a master's from Rutgers. So she's like 24. She goes, and her friend next to her was like, yeah, that's right. We don't say that anymore. You know, it's transgender, or I said, okay, back in our day, we used to call them women impersonators, but I don't know who the fuck we are, but I don't give a fuck what you think. I'm doing okay right now. And that's not, it sounds rude, but it's just right. Like, who are you to tell that's me? Right. What, so, all right, time out on that. And like, we could talk about different days, but all right, we'll see what happens. All right, go ahead, Ben.
So you had mentioned Anthony Turo, other friends that you remember growing up that you were close with?
I wasn't really close friends with anybody except Tony because he lived right on the block. But I remember I was thinking about this when I got your invite for the interview. We, you know, we used to go home for lunch a lot.
Yeah.
So I remember going to Jimmy Riley's house. It was always grilled cheese and tomato soup.
Oh, no kidding. That's funny.
Yeah, and it became a habit. Like three times a week for like a month. I didn't realize, you know, you're a kid, but, you know, you don't think of anything like that. And then I went to Paul Lonergan's house for lunch once, and she made the best ham sandwiches. And that happened the first time. Then I think I heard her say, doesn't this kid have any freaking food in his whole house? but, you know, again, when you're a kid, you just assimilate, you just do what you do. But I do remember going to those guys' houses, and like really nice houses. You know, we walked from school. You know, Doug's here. Okay, hi, Doug, whatever. Nice bowl of soup, grilled cheese. We weren't even really that close friends. We just hung out a little bit, you know, but great guy, both great guys, you know. And I saw Paul at the reunion a couple of years ago. But, yeah, no, that's the kind of thing, going back to what I said about growing up. You know, remember you were allowed to spank other people's kids if they fucked around?
Yeah.
And I apologize for the language. I'm sure you can censor it.
That's right. But, that's something that we talk about a lot on here. Again, one of the common themes is that everybody was your parent when you were in their sphere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pauly Sojan's mom was my mom when I was in her presence. Wow. And vice versa.
Yep.
And that was true for any mom, any dad, had no bone, made no bones about disciplining you or correcting you because you were doing something goofy, you know. And today, you know, I can barely talk to a child before the mom steps in and says, what do you need? And I said, I'm just talking to your kid. You know, there's no need to intervene.
Yeah. And to your earlier point, this is the opposite side. You know, other people's parents were allowed to mentor you and help you along and teach you and inspire you, too. You know, I kind of like that.
You know, 100%.
My uncle was a big plumber. You know, my dad was he worked for Restigo Brothers Bakeries and delivered bread, and he had his own general contracting business. So I'd learned plumbing from my uncle. My next door neighbor was an Air Force dude, great guy, Tony Negron. He's actually the guy who inspired me to join the Air Force back in 1980. God, I feel old saying 1980, but
yes.
You know, so I just remember a lot of adult men and a lot of adult women just gave me good guidance and a smack once in a while when you needed it.
Yeah. Well, so you came right out of high school and went into the Air Force.
1 year, yeah. So I worked at Beggars as a DJ for until the day I left the Air Force.
And, no kidding.
That's when Fingers replaced me. So probably about 2 or 3 months before I went to the Air Force, you know, we parted ways with Beggars. Fingers and I were great friends. So I'd still go there and just watch him work and have a great time. But I like Lords a lot. I mean, so many good memories. I sang in a choir. I was in a play. I remember you and I and a couple of other guys were in your basement. We all decided which Happy Days character we're going to be. I think we all voted. We all voted you as Fonzie, if you remember. And there weren't a lot of Puerto Ricans on Happy Days, so I was left out. But do you remember that down in your basement? We would.
I do.
You were playing drums on a chair. I don't even think we had any instruments. We were just fucking fooling around. Excuse me. Hang on a second, bud.
Yep.
Let me send a message. Hang on. I'll call you later. Now, I got a lot of calls with my company, so if it's not profitable, it's much more you're much more valuable at this moment than that is. So anyway. Yep. Lords was great. You know, I remember I wasn't there, but I think the Ramones went there after I had joined the Air Force. And I remember the Bazaars, which were always rigged, by the way.
You know, in the basement.
Yeah. You know, the casino nights and just like I said, there was always something going on. And it's funny because I don't know if you remember, but my dad worked for an Italian bread company. And he would always drop off rolls at the convent for the nuns. So they loved him. And then, we used to give, $5 a week at mass every week. I think one time we missed it and they called my mom and dad. They said, hey, you forgot to donate this week? They're like, no. And they go, wait a second. Don't I give you $100 worth of bread every week? See? But just little things like that just trigger my memory. I remember Sister Patrice smacking the hell out of me. I remember little Sister Four coming in. I'm like, that's not a nun. That's Susan. That's not a nun. That's anyway, I think the habits never fit. It was ridiculous, you know. I remember we were allowed to bring in snacks for friends, but you had to bring enough for everybody. Valentine's Day. It was just really a lot of fun growing up, man. Yeah. And there's not a whole lot I would have changed about, you know, who I hung with, where I grew up. It was a great, great life. You know, it's just.
Well, I remember you. I remember you hanging out in the park with us for several years, and I would say it was around the 8th, 9th grade time period, if my memory serves me.
Yeah, and again, I wasn't really part of the gang, I wasn't.
Yeah.
But I think I was social with everybody. I remember Tommy Nanny was there, Charlie O, yep. You. Yep. It was just. We just knew what faces we see and, how that day was going to pan out and it'll be a good day. But I remember playing handball. My older brother Greg was great at handball. He used to play the real handball, the black ball with the gloves,
Right.
The super pinkies, Spalding balls, which is what we used when we were kids, the little ones. But I'm not going to speak of that stickball. I mean, do kids even know what stickball is now? Or remember we used to play, you bounce the ball against a stoop and however far it went, was base, stuff like that. Just sitting on the stoop, being so close to Lord's, I saw a lot of people walking past my house. My dad and I and brothers, we just sit on the stoop. I mean, people say, what'd you do? We just sat there. And we just,
That's right. I think my father was was a fixture on my front steps. Everybody knew my father from sitting on the stoop.
Yeah, everybody knew my father because he was a loud whistler and yeller. He's a Batman. I'm trying to think. Yeah, do kids even call it a stoop anymore? I don't know, But I remember in the playground at the playground. Yeah, I guess the recess at Lord's. I forgot who it was. My older brother was in 8th grade. I think I was in 6th grade. And they used to pick on me because they called me Little Chong. I'm like, okay, I'm a little Filipino, but I don't look that Asian. But it's funny because this big guy from my brother's class started pushing him around. I did a judo flip and flipped him on his ass. And then he with me. Then remember, you talk to somebody, say, hey, I got to talk to you about something. Somebody go behind him, kneel down, then you push him up. That's assault right now. That's considered assault.
Right. No, I remember your brother Greg being a big guy.
Yeah, he was a big guy.
Is that true? Yeah.
I mean, not fat. He was muscular.
No. But a big guy, like a tough guy kind of thing.
Yeah. He didn't take any crap. I don't know if you want to delete this, but I was coming home from Beggars when I worked as DJ. I was driving down Jamaica Avenue. I see my brother's truck pulled over. He's got an axe handle in his hand, and this guy's with his head cracked open. So I pull up. What's up? I'm gonna do something. just want to make sure. Yeah. This guy was wise enough to me. He tried to cut me off and talk shit to my girlfriend. So I had to teach him something. I'm like, man. That's the bad side. But no, it's, you know, just like I said, going back to Lourdes, I think it was a great education. I think whether it's religious based or some otherwise based, if you have a private setting with a good curriculum that teaches basic life skills, I think we're missing a lot of that right now. You know, and just the fact that you had a, you know, homeroom, you know, we didn't have homeroom. We just had one class. Teachers, I think, would come in. Right.
Right.
So, you know, you just had this family away from family, and, you know, you always felt safe. I never heard of a school shooting when I was growing up. You know, I never heard about, you know, gender lessons or sexuality lessons at 4 years old. I mean, I don't think we even had sex education in Lourdes at all, you know. So just the curriculum today, I think we need to do a better job of teaching citizenship, you know, integrity. I always say practice grace, you know. I would wish we would teach people how to practice grace and practice gratitude versus I'm left, you're right, you suck, I suck, whatever. It's exhausting, man. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I think for me, the politics of it don't quite get to the kids. What is concerning for me, and again, based on what we're doing with these interviews, is kids don't have friendships. And it's my belief that this is where you learn to love somebody, right? You first love a friend, and then that allows you to have a partner at some point, you know, a boyfriend, girlfriend kind of thing.
Right.
And then that allows you to get married. But you need practice when you're little to understand how to put somebody else ahead of you. My concern for the kids today is that they're not getting that practice because they're online, and you know, the anonymity of it leaves no responsibility. You know, if I have to look you in the eye, I've got some responsibility to you and for you, and I think that's missing today. And kids are gonna have some long term repercussions because right. they won't be practiced.
No, that's right. And I think, you know, one of the things that I do actually like on the right side of politics, not to be political, is they say, look, we want women to have babies. We want families to stay together. We want to put back the institutional marriage as a part of the community where you share and things like that. You know, right now, nothing against single parents. I think it's great. I love that fact that you didn't kill it. But, you know, mom and dad were there. We had a structure. We had a dinner table. We had a time to eat. We had discipline. We had great, you know, dinner table conversations there back then were, how was school today? Or my dad telling me a story about something he saw on one of his routes, or my brother saying, yeah, I won some handball games, or my sister just talking because she was a little younger than us, you know, talking about what's going on with her and her friends, you know. And then now, I don't know, families even eat together? I don't know. I mean, it's just me and my lady here, but I know when I had my kids, when I, you know, they were younger and I was married, you know, we had dinner together at the table, you know. Now
right.
I'm gonna get Uber Eats, Dad.
What? Well, I do know a lot of families where when their children eat at my house, they're a little surprised that the parents and the kids are eating together. Like, there's one family that my boy is friends with, and they never eat dinner together. Now, in my house, my wife, my 11-year-old and I, we have a strict dinner every night. And mm-hmm. and you, whether you're hungry or not, doesn't matter. You come and you sit for dinner, because dinner is not about food. It's about talking about the day. It's reflecting on the day.
Yeah.
But it's true. I think there are that is missing in a lot of families today. I'm sorry to say.
I agree with you 100%, man. It's like, gosh.
So, you know, it's funny you brought up your brother with handball, because now all of a sudden that has triggered a whole bunch of memories of your brother playing blackball. And I just never would have had that thought until you brought it up. If you remember, the Lonigans were really the champions. Mr. Lonigan and Jimmy Lonigan, who was the oldest, Joe Lonergan was amazing. Paul, at one point, he was touring all over New York playing competitive handball. And we would go with him. Yeah, we would travel with him to different parks and different event centers. And he would compete in handball tournaments. I mean, he was amazing. I always tell people I have the pleasure of saying that there were a couple of times that I beat him. and literally a couple, twice, I think, maybe three times I beat him out of the 3,000 games that we played, you know.
No, I've not been back to the park in a long, long time. Well, the handball wall's still up, and they're still being
used. Yeah, it's a different park now. They totally, it's not called Braddock Park anymore. It's something else. And they totally reconfigured it. But the handball walls, you know, those things will be there for the next several hundred years. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. Okay. But it is a different looking park. And for some reason, it's a whole lot smaller than it was when we were there, but yeah, the neighborhood looks very much the same. I don't know if you've gotten contacted yet by Marianne, but we're putting together a 50-year reunion next May 31st.
Oh, I haven't gotten contact. Yeah, she organized the last one. It was great. I saw.
Yeah, she'll be reaching out to you. I'm working on a flyer right now to send out to people, but she's reaching out to people just to kind of put a bug in their ears. So I sent her your contact information yesterday. So she'll be reaching out.
I saw her and actually, you know, after the reunion, I just started watching Facebook. She's doing amazing things with her dancing and her fitness business and stuff. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Houston is amazing, you know, but I ran into so many people, and I don't have the pictures, but if you talk to Marianne, she's got a bunch of pictures of us when we went out to the bar and, you know.
Well, they're all up on the website now. We have.
Oh, okay.
There are a lot of pictures of you at that last reunion.
Yeah, it was funny. I don't know if you remember or anybody told you, we tried to get in the Dublins. They wouldn't let us in.
No, I didn't know that.
I guess there was too many people or something like that. I don't remember. But we wound up, I think, at a Chili's or something. And just sat there and talked, just like you and I are, but over a cocktail. You know, it was a lot of fun. It was good to see a lot of people. So, but no, I'm going back to OLL before we proceed to Braddock. Great memory. Love the fact I had to worry about what I was going to wear to school that day.
Right. I think the uniform thing is great. Now, of course, you're a military man, so do you. But I love the uniform idea. For kids.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Just again, it's actually a cost savings for parents. It's not conforming or brainwashing. No, we got a certain way we want everybody to look because we're a good institution and stuff. And it wasn't a bad looking uniform. OLL all the time.
Yeah.
So anyway. Yeah.
I mean, many of us, you know, our pants were too short and you know, and stuff like that.
Oh my God. Yeah. So anyway, speaking of Lords, so obviously I had a chance to run into a great guy named Mike Pote in Tel Aviv back in 15, I believe.
that was
a great
amazing
time, man. It was so good to see you and hear about your family and your life in Israel. And then I was at a Saints game in New Orleans with my son against the Buc. I'm a big Buccaneers fan, which is weird. I grew up Jet fan, and my office in Tampa was right across from the stadium and the office, and did a lot of work with them and became a Bucs fan in '84. Anyway, getting back to the story, so Joe Andres was in New Orleans for something, and so he and I met for coffee, and you know, it's like I haven't seen this guy in 40 years, but
how did you even recognize him? I mean,
he's a little bit bigger than he is now, was then, but you know, he always had that face, you know.
That's true.
His voice, and you know, we're Facebook friends and stuff, so just so happened I was staying at a hotel in New Orleans before the game or after the game. We met for coffee and, you know, had a good conversation. You know, we were with that
guy.
He was part of the clique too, but I don't think he and I were ever really, really close, but still a solid dude. And I think he's doing extremely well business-wise based on his post. And I guess he was a roadie for rock bands for years and years.
Yeah, that's what
a lot of great member of
that. He manages their money or something like that.
Yeah. But it was pretty cool to see him. I mean, just again, see anybody.
So where are you living now?
I live in the D.C. area. It's a town called Reston, Virginia.
Yeah, I know. I used to live in Bethesda.
Oh, okay. So you know where I'm. I'm like 20 minutes from D.C. So most people, I just say I live in a D.C. metro area because that's what they call it, or Northern Virginia. But now I've been here about 6 years, almost 7 years. Shit, 7 years.
Great. Have you seen anybody else from?
I have not, except for the reunion. No, I haven't. No, I saw Blaho. He's a professor, right, or a doctor or something at a university. John Blaho.
I don't know what John does. I do know he's involved academically. We just contacted him, and he said, "Hey, I'm running a marathon in Berlin." So I know he's over in Germany right now, but I'm not really sure what he does.
That's funny, man. Yeah, but no, I you know, being in the military, aside from Johnny B and you and Andres, I don't think I've physically in person met anybody else from Lourdes. It's a bit
interesting. Interesting. Okay. Well, final thoughts?
Not really. I mean, I appreciate the opportunity to share and reminisce with you. You know, I think Queens Village was a great place. Queen Village, Belrose area, whatever they call it. I think OOL was a great place. I think kids were kids back then who focused on being kids, not being woke or political or demonstrating. It was just kids were being kids, and I like that. I miss seeing that. I do live in a high rise right now, but it's you know, there's no big yards or anything for people to hang out in. And the few families I do see here, they don't mingle in the common area. So I just wish we can get back to that state of mind where it's like, hey, you know, school's done, work's done. And my next plan is to share with somebody and eat a meal, have a cocktail, barbecue some ribs, do something besides get off being on the iPhone. Or I've never been a gamer. I've never played an online game in my life. But these kids play hours of Call of Duty with people around the world and
World
Dungeons and Dragons. I'm like, dude, I raised three men. You know, it's weird. My youngest is 23. My oldest is 40.
They're all, wow.
Yeah, I know. And they're all men. You know, they're men who own companies and businesses and who are chemical engineers and are photographers. They're doing great stuff. And they grew up with the basic values that I think you and I did, Mickey. Just, you know, take care of yourself, take care of your family. You know, I don't know if this is a guy on Facebook. His series is called Be a Man. But it's funny as hell. He's stupid stuff. Like, next time there's a hurricane, don't go to a shelter. It's down on your roof. Be a man. Yeah, check him out. He's got some really stupid things, you know. But it's just funny. Can I say be a man? If you say be a man now, it's considered misogynistic. I'm like, no, I still open doors for my lady. I still pull out her chair. I still say please and thank you to everybody. And now the cool thing about being older, you could say thanks, honey, to a young girl without being, you know, accused of being anything other than an old man. But, you know, just... I wish we could return, and I'm not stuck in the old days. I wish we could return to the values and principles that made us what we are today. Now, if I remember correctly, you can get the recording. You were doing marketing for dental offices. Are you still doing that?
So I buy and sell eye care practices, and yeah, I'm sorry. I own an accounting firm.
Okay.
So that's what I do.
I don't know why I thought dentist, but I knew it was something healthcare related.
Now, how'd you wind up? I've always been in healthcare, a real interest of mine, medicine.
How'd you wind up in California?
So after things got really bad in Israel.
Sure.
And I won't get into all the details because they're kind of sad. But I just said, you know, we're going back to the States. Yeah. And my oldest son was in San Francisco. My middle son now was in Los Angeles. And so we thought, oh, let's move to the West Coast and we could spend some time with them. Now, so we moved to San Francisco and my oldest moved to Connecticut, opened up a restaurant, and my middle son moved to Nashville to be back home where he grew up. So, wow. So we were stuck in California, but without any family around us.
Oh, wow. Yeah, your oldest son was a music producer, right, I believe?
My middle son, yeah. He actually is opening up a school now for a music school. teach kids how to produce their own music. Yeah.
Cool.
So he's doing that now. Okay, Doug. Well, thank you. I appreciate the interview and your insights on things. We'll talk from time to time.
Sounds good. And Shana Tova, brother. I forgot to say that.
Thank you, sir. All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Mike.
See you soon. Bye. Bye-bye.